WNST, Towson, Baltimore, at AM 1570, Baltimore Positive. We have a positively good result here. We're going to be talking about it all week long. The Maryland Lottery is going to be presenting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Friday. We're going to be at Pappas in Cockeysville a little early this week. We're going from noon until 3. Stop by for lunch, have a crab cake, say hello. Jim Reese from Off of Kerman's going to be there with us, fresh off of his stop with Guy Fieri and Triple D's, as well as Leonard Raskin from Raskin Global will be stopping by. We're going to be talking finance, my rent-to-own issues and all of that. And also Mike Bordick. We'll get a little baseball in. And I know Luke is sidewinded me about third quarter of the press box on Sunday night as the great Ryan Mountcastle appeared. It was great to see him. I had somebody, I had a picture with Cedric Mullins on my timeline that I think he was at the game as well. Luke, they won. So if Ryan Mountcastle is good luck, bring us five more Adley Rutschmans and John Meanses and whatever we need to do. We were always better than the Indians at baseball back in the day anyway.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, as many guys as you can bring in that you want to bring to a Ravens game, the Orioles certainly need that. But it was nice to see those guys. And, hey, they both had good seasons. I mean, Mullins had a great season. So it was nice to see him get that recognition. Probably not used to that big of a crowd. If, you know, not to deliver the low blow, just reality at this point in time. But, no, I mean, certainly added to the atmosphere. You had, the light-up bracelets for the pregame introductions, and they used those at a couple of different points, which you and I talked about in the press box. I commend the effort. You know, it's not Ray Lewis doing the squirrel. I don't know if they're ever going to replicate or find anything close to that. But
hey, Luke, let me say something else, because my wife didn't go to the game. We've been selling our tickets. It's a long story. You know, they've broken up the Beatles, you know, at football games. So I sit with you now, and, you know, my timeline is full of all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. Black people, white people, women, men, young people, old people, just a lot of different people. And the people that go to the games, and I've said this many times, and I'm speaking from true experience, they were the same people. They were the same people every week. The tailgate was the same place. All of that has been broken up, whether it's time, attrition, money, the knee in Wembley, politics, changing of the guard, don't come to the city, whatever those things are that keep people from the games, there aren't different people coming to the games, and they come for different reasons. And you and I, you know, as many reasons on the pink Todd Heap jersey was, you know, a great recruiting tool 20 years ago for the ladies and making restrooms a little more comfortable for them back in the day. David Modell and I used to fight about why people come to the game. There were more people than I could count who thought the light up thing, the blinky blinky thing was really cool. And they were like, you know, that when you spend $180 to come to a Ravens game, you don't just want a Ravens game anymore. You need a little of this. And John Ogden needs to visit the suite. And it needs to be like the Rolling Stones. It needs to be a night out where for most of us, we had season ticket books. All we cared about was how the secondary played. And we were on the games and defense. Now they have signs up telling people when it's okay to cheer. And so, dude, it's a little goofy. It's a little different. And it's not as hardcore, although it gets loud on third down. But I'm not sure everybody in there really knows a lot about Brandon Stevens. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that anymore, but it's much more spectacle-based. And to your point, Ray's not dancing. So if the excitement level of a fan is that they give him a 25-cent trinket that they get sponsored and the blinky blinks go off when you actually get a nighttime game and little Johnny goes home and says, Mommy, Daddy took me to the game and the blinkies went off. I mean, to me, it's a hockey game, right? Like, because I've been to a lot of hockey games. That's what it looks like to me. But for some people, it's a thrill seeing those lights. It's the Super Bowl. It's all of that. And maybe other than a Garth Brooks concert, they don't get that action.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't have any problem with it. And I mean, it looked pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and say that it didn't look neat, but I mean, it really comes down to, and you mentioned hockey. I mean, the same thing with indoor soccer, same thing with the NBA.
Dude, no, I've been on the radio 30 years in a couple of weeks. How do you think it was in 1992 talking about exploding soccer balls and music playing while they were in play? And I mean, the NBA, I mean, it's on and on and on. And Dick Cass sat on these airwaves 15 years ago and said, I'm not sure what we're going to do to get people. Our number one problem is going to be, how do we get people to come to our games? And all of this, the game stunk, dude. Like the game, yeah. Like the games have primarily stunk. The Miami game stunk. The Chargers game stunk. The Bengals game stunk in a different way. I mean, the Minnesota game didn't stink, but like, you know, you pay a lot of money. It's cold. It's really cold when you're losing. You know, although, so,
I'd say the Chiefs and the Colts games are pretty darn good, though. I mean, if we're going to play this game, right.
But getting your money's worth about all of it, if you do go down there and you get your ass kicked and it's a terrible night, that the blinky blinks is one little thing they offer. And I mean, I can't knock the game because they're trying really hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like knocking their social media for being homers. I mean, they got 15 people in the press box doing 15 things, the photographer. I mean, they take their business seriously in that way. So I give them big points on that. You know, they put on a football game.
It's all about casting as wide a net as you can, right? You're trying to touch and reach as many people as you can. And let's be very clear. So much of this still comes down to you have one of the best players on the planet, Lamar Jackson. Sunday's performance notwithstanding, we'll get into that. But it's still because of that and because they win that people are going to show up. I mean, those, all of the things you just mentioned augment the experience. They supplement, they complement the experience to say, hey, this is better than watching it at home in front of my 65-inch HD, 4K, whatever kind of TV you have, and cheaper beer and cheaper food and all of that. You know, you can get that. And that's why, you know, you mentioned maybe some of the more no-nonsense, hardcore, older football fans, they might enjoy the television experience more so now than dealing with, you know, the headaches of it, the parking, you know, the traffic, whatever it might be. You know, all the various excuses you mentioned that are all valid to varying degrees. But yeah, you're trying to cast a wider net. You're trying to create an experience, as you mentioned, and it still has to begin and end with the football itself. No one's coming out for a bracelet if you're 3-14. You know, go ask some of the, you know, go ask Jacksonville if light up bracelets are going to matter there. No,
oh my God.
They don't.
Like, and in this time of the year when the weather turns a little bit, even when the weather's good in Jacksonville, I watch Red Zone all day and I'm like, oh my. You know what I mean? You talked about the Orioles and Ryan Mountcastle being lonely.
Yeah.
There's some lonely in this league for when the Jets play and the Texans play and like just, you know, god awful. Where there's not the possibility, the upside of Lamar breaking some ankles and or throwing the ball over your head or whatever, just places where there's not a whole lot of hope right now, and this isn't one of them. And, you know, getting back onto the field, the hope of Lamar and time off and the offense and the running the ball and throwing it around and executing, doing the things they want to do in the offense at the end of the night to say, yeah, we won, but we were impressive doing it. That was not Sunday's effort.
No, not at all. Specifically on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, we already talked about the defense. The defense deserves their flowers. They deserve the praise. They shut down the best rushing attack in the NFL. Defense was outstanding. And we can go down the list. They got pressure on Baker Mayfield. They stopped the run. They minimized the big plays. There were still a couple. But again, where they were on the field, it didn't hurt them as much. And even the lone touchdown that Cleveland scored, you and I were arguing in the press box whether Njoku caught that. I'm still not quite sure. I don't think it was a slam dunk that some Ravens fans on social media were trying to make it to be. I don't know if it was clear and obvious, although I'm inclined to think it might have hit the ground. But it was tough. But beyond that, looking at the offense, I mean, it's very clear this isn't just a 1 or 2 week blip at this point. And you know, what's interesting about this, Nestor, is clearly when Lamar Jackson throws 4 interceptions, it's a career high. He matched his previous career high in the first half on Sunday. His previous career high had been 3 in that overtime win in Pittsburgh 2 years ago. You know, the Josh Bynes coming off the street and playing linebacker game for them, but if you look at it quietly, we can all think back to what Lamar did against the Colts in the second half. I mean, that was his Mona Lisa from a standpoint of not that he hadn't had great games in his MVP season, but that checked every box in terms of Ravens couldn't run the ball, so they had to throw. Down multiple scores in the second half. fourth quarter drives. I mean, it checked every box that isn't related to January in terms of Lamar Jackson, the passer. And we thought, wow, this was unbelievable. And it was, you know, it capped a really strong start to the season for him with his first five games of the season throwing the football. But as much as a lot of people looked at what he did on Sunday night and pointed to the fact that, yeah, he was coming off of an illness that forced him out of not playing at all, you know, against Chicago. And you could certainly attribute some rust when you're talking about a guy who hadn't played in over 2 weeks. But if you look at Lamar over the last five games now, not counting the Bears, because he didn't play, of course, over those five games, he's thrown seven touchdowns and nine interceptions. He's only averaged 6.3 yards per attempt. His passer rating over those last five games is 70.5. He quietly, from a passing standpoint, has not been very good since that Colts game. And look, Sunday was a perfect example of why Lamar Jackson is as special as he is, even on a night when he was horrendous. I mean, let's call a spade. You throw four picks in this league. I mean, it was the first time in 8 years a quarterback that threw four picks and his team won.
If he
won.
Did that four times a year, he wouldn't be the quarterback of the team anymore.
I mean, right. I mean, you just don't see that. I mean, sure, Tom Brady's done it before. Patrick Mahomes has had, you know, he's had a couple games like that this year where he's thrown picks, but you just don't see that often. But what you see from him, though, even on a night where he's really struggling in that way, is you get the touchdown pass to Mark Andrews where he retreats, 20-some yards and throws the longest 13-yard touchdown maybe in NFL history, or at least of the season, let's say, around the league. And it just speaks to what he can do. I mean, look at late in that game. You know, they get into a four-minute offense situation where they need to chew clock, and a lot of it has to do with him running the ball because, you know, they're not getting a whole lot from their running backs right now. So even when Lamar has a bad game, and certainly he'd be the first to tell you, I mean, you could tell in the post game he was happy to win, but he was very unhappy with how he played. And hey, you want your quarterback to feel that way, right? You know, you don't want him to just say, oh, it's a win, no big deal. He knows he needs to be better. There's no question about that. But he still brings those special elements. He still is able to compartmentalize enough that he doesn't let it snowball. Maybe it snowballed a little bit at the end of the first half when you consider, you know, throwing that many picks in a short period of time. But he was able to regroup enough in the second half. And you know, what's kind of crazy about it is we talk so much about the cover zero and the blitzing and all that. His issues on Sunday night came when he had time and it was a clean pocket. And he targeted Mark Andrews on each of those interceptions. He actually did a really nice job when he was pressured on Sunday, including the touchdown where Myles Garrett is right in his face. So, you know, it was definitely a surreal, bizarre performance from Lamar Jackson where, you know, there was way more bad than what you're accustomed to seeing with him. But like I said, this isn't something, you know, he hasn't been throwing four picks every game. Let's be clear about that. But, you know, he has had some issues turning the football over. I mean, nine interceptions in a 5 week period, a five game period for him. You know, that's not very good. Now that's not MVP. Like, let's put it that way. As much as we're trying to figure out who the MVP is in the league, and Lamar's not unique in that way. We've seen some other guys, Matt Stafford, people were talking about a month ago as the MVP, and see how that's kind of gone for the Rams over the last 3-4 weeks. So, you know, so you're going to go through those periods, but certainly as Lamar Jackson goes, the Ravens go. And when you couple that with the fact that you don't have J.K. Dobbins, you don't have Gus Edwards, you don't have Ronnie Stanley, you're just getting Nick Boyle back, and clearly he's not 100% or back to pre-injury form. You know, it really does become much more dependent on what Lamar does individually. And hey, you throw four interceptions. Like I said, the Ravens in that way, what they were able to do winning that football game when your quarterback does that. And I mentioned in our previous conversation about, you know, the turnovers and the fewer than 325 yards, whatever it was, in the Super Bowl era, the first team that's been able to pull out a win in that way. It's very unique territory, but I'll still say Lamar still made some plays that were very pivotal in that game. So they need him to be better, but that's across the board for this offense right now. And, you know, we keep saying it, that this kind of performance isn't going to cut it when they get to the playoffs or when they get to this tougher competition late in the season. And I'll continue to subscribe to that. But at the same time, they keep finding ways to win, which is really a testament to these players and to this coaching staff, that everything they've gone through from an injury standpoint and everything they've gone through just in the context of these games where bad things have happened. They've made bad plays. They've missed tackles and given up big plays on defense. They can't run the ball consistently unless it's your quarterback doing it. They find ways to win. And again, I mean, you know, on a night where Lamar Jackson throws four picks, I mean, if I tell you that on Saturday, I don't think you're even asking the question, did they win the game? I think that you just assume they lost. And for them to pull out that win says a lot about them. I think it says a lot about the Browns as well, if we're being honest. But hey, they got a win, and this team's 8-3, and they continue to roll, even if that has not been a smooth roll, even though it's been a very bumpy roll, let's say. But they're coming out on top much more often than not to this point.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there in Owings Mills. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast, and the tasty chicken. I got leftover turkey around here. Western fries sound like right about me right now. I've been gassing up here as we're heading to Pittsburgh this week. Luke will be out in Owings Mills. Any breaking news will happen first on the WNST text service. That's all brought to you by Coons Ford. Dennis will be here on Thursday from 3 until 5. We're getting back into rotation after the weekend. We had a great Maryland Crab Cake Tour visit presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We did that up in at Conrad's Crabs. It was delicious crab cake, delicious crab hash. I had an appetizer, this sweet potato crostini that was just a great chef up there. If you get up to Abingdon, stop and see our friends at Conrad's. Andrew was a great guest as well. Eric Sauer and my wife came on talking about There Goes My Hero and Giving Tuesday. You can round up at Wise Markets as well. We are having Wise conversations here all week. It is a week of great charity, Luke. And I suppose there was something quite charitable about Lamar on Sunday. I did a couple of national shows this week. I did JT the Brick in the Aftermath. And, you know, I guess people will call me maybe this week on Pittsburgh or whatever. And they'll talk about Lamar. And it's always about Lamar, right? And I said, you know, he takes really good care of the football. I did Munch Bishop's show Saturday night after Ohio State got their ass kicked. By the way, I didn't get a Harbaugh question in about his brother. I meant to like sideways throw in and give me a little Wolverines or a little sing a little Old Michigan or whatever. But because Ohio got their butts kicked twice by the Harbaugh family over the weekend as well. You know, I would just say for Lamar, the RPO handoff was always something like the ball's going to wind up on the ground. The ball's going to wind up on the ground. That's the way I felt about it. Now we're 50 starts into his career. Is that the right number? Am I on, give or take?
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to think what the exact number is. I mean, what, 15 last year, and he's at 10 this year. I mean, and then, yeah.
Well, it's three full seasons.
15
right?
The year before.
Right? He came in the
Yeah, I mean, he's coming up on – yeah, right, right. Yeah,
so,
I mean,
okay, 50-ish. You know,
it's in that vicinity.
50-ish games. I mean, dude, the first 15 were outliers because they looked like magnets. You know, it literally was run left, run right, dive left, get down, chuck the ball when you can. That's was the beginning. But I would say the mature version of Lamar, and even as bad as he was and they were in the middle of the year last year when I'm not sure he was physically right up in Philadelphia, some of those games in the middle of the year last year. But turning the ball over is not his thing. And he's really hard on himself. I think we can all see that, you know, whether we agree with it or not, the pounding of the ground. And, you know, all the teammates get asked how calm and cool he is. Doesn't feel calm and cool. It feels like his reaction when he gets back out there, he has amnesia when he's in the play. He's not like a pitcher thinking about the last pitch. But I do think when he goes over to the bench, he's real hard on himself. And I don't know that he's the most open-minded or coachable on the bench after those circumstances. And quite frankly, he hasn't had a lot of failure. You know what I mean? Dude, go ask that kid from Jacksonville what it's like lately for him, you know? Or go ask Joe Burrow what it was like to be hurt and suck. And now he doesn't suck anymore, and they don't suck anymore, and beware of the Bengals. But Lamar's had a lot of success. even when there's been failure, he's been able to go out there, put a cape on, run around. He came out of the bathroom in Cleveland last year, right? Like, all of these things that have happened through 50 games. I mean, did Kyle Bowler even make it 50 games? Probably right around 50 games. He probably got about that many starts. Probably less than that. Probably more like 35. And never figured it out. And so I can't harp on Lamar as turnover machine, even though the numbers have been bad the last couple of weeks. But clearly, blocking's not the same. Running game's not the same. Down at distance isn't the same. He doesn't have anybody else to hand. There's no Mark Ingram on this side and J.K. Dobbins on that side, or a youthful Gus Edwards coming in on the fourth quarter to run people over. There's what they are. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him now. Contract, winning. Now they're the one seed. Now they're now all of a sudden, if they have to go on the road in January because they stubbed their toe in Pittsburgh this week and they're no good in Cincinnati, and Lamar turns an ankle and can't play against the Packers for a week or two, weird stuff happens, right? That they're the one seed in the AFC right now. They beat the Chiefs. If you would have told me all of this September 1st, after the injury and the sky was falling and we were going out to Vegas and we don't know why, because they were going to go 0-18, right? So, there was all of that happened. They're the one seed through all of this. I can't bitch too much about the four picks, although I will. And I will say cut it out. They have to cut it out. And Urban will be on it early in the morning. And Roman will be on it late at night. And they'll try to get everybody up to speed. But they're not really that good. This isn't the team from 2 years ago. So however they do it, by hook or crook, my expectation, dude, if they win the Super Bowl, I can sit here on December 1st and say, I have no thought that they're going to win the Super Bowl or be in the Super Bowl or whatever, but I've got a room held for you and I, and they're the one seed, and now they're going to Pittsburgh, and better not lose to them. They suck, right? So I'm not as worried about Lamar, but I do think it's great theater that I will be getting the phone calls about Lamar, the turnover machine, after Sunday night. You know, I'm not the biggest guy on Lamar. I'm not the be-all, end-all with Lamar because he runs in the linebackers. I'll always say that. But I can't pick on Lamar about turnovers. You know what I mean? Like, that's not his game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think it's certainly it's concerning that it's been a five-game stretch, because, of course, he sat out against Chicago. For him to have 9 picks, I mean, think about it. He threw 6 interceptions his entire 2019 season. He threw 9 interceptions last year.
He was in 2nd-and-2 all night. Well, and he could run, and they could run, and Marshall Yanda could run, and Ronnie Stanley, you know, like, it was – that's why, right? I mean, now he's got to, like – do stuff in a freaky 6-3-ish game. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and I think that's where that you just said it. And that's where I think you're seeing this. I don't want to say catch up with him, because that implies that there's some fatal flaw. And I don't think that's the case whatsoever. I mean, Patrick Mahomes has turned the ball over a lot this year, and he's the guy who's considered the heir apparent as far as being, you know, the next GOAT, or whatever you want to call him, as it relates to Tom Brady, let's say. But he has turned the ball over more, and that is a problem. You know, you can't just brush off 9 interceptions in 5 games, especially in this day and age. This isn't 1990, where quarterbacks threw 20-plus interceptions, or go back way back when to, you know, the era of Unitas, when you look at some of the touchdown-to-interception ratios. I mean, you don't see that in this game, and the rules cater to that, right? I mean, the rules make that possible. So it's not as though these quarterbacks are just better than previous eras. It's a different game. But you do look at the offensive line and what it was built to do, which is run the football. Certainly was built with Ronnie Stanley being at left tackle, having that in mind. And clearly they haven't had that. Clearly was built with having J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards running the football.
This doesn't even sound like that team, right?
It's not.
When you give it long breaths of all of this, yeah. I'm like, that sounds good. This sounds good. Can we have those guys in January? No. And that's why it looks like it looks.
Right. And that's why that helps, to me, that helps explain why maybe you're seeing a Lamar Jackson who's not taking care of the football quite as well. Because quite frankly, he's having to take some chances. Now, that can quickly turn into forcing it and trying to play a little more hero ball, which I think Lamar can be guilty of, which a lot of great quarterbacks are guilty of that. Brett Favre, boy, you talk about a quarterback playing hero ball and making mistakes. Brett Favre is the first guy that comes to mind. You're talking about an all-time great there. So,
well, John Elway had the fourth quarter comebacks because he threw the second quarter picks.
No question. No question. So that happens. Again, this isn't picking on Lamar Jackson. This is the evolution and the ebbs and flows of being an NFL quarterback. You mentioned Kyle Bowler. I mean, you mentioned how many starts he might have had. He had 42 career starts for the Ravens. So Lamar is at 47 now. he threw nearly as many interceptions as touchdowns. I think actually for his career, he threw more picks. For the Ravens, he had 45 touchdowns, 44 interceptions. So, you know, we've seen a Lamar Jackson who is much, much, much better in that regard, as you would expect. I mean, I'm not breaking any news there reading off the stats, but when you are talking about a quarterback who only had 6 picks 2 years ago, only had 9 last year, and he has 9 over his last 5 games, that's notable. That's not something you can just completely brush off. And yeah, we can debate it. And I the 4 picks, one of those weren't on him really on Sunday night, but I'm really careful not to dive into that too much, because then it's like, okay, we need to go back and look at all the dropped interceptions over the course of the season. So that evens out, but he's got to take better care of the football. He's got to be better than he was Sunday night. But again, go back to the big plays he made. I mean, the Andrews touchdown. Is there another quarterback? Maybe Patrick Mahomes. I'll put Mahomes in that category that can make that touchdown throw there where they're running backwards 20 plus yards. But other than him, no other quarterback in the league can make that play. So even with the bat, which there's been a little bit more of that than you're accustomed to, still Lamar Jackson. And he's had to do a whole lot this year. So it was really good to see specifically the defense, but his teammates pick him up over the course of Sunday night and win a game that, you know, looking at all those statistics, you'd say, probably didn't deserve to win. But again, maybe it's nice that you played the Browns when that happens. We'll keep coming back to that.
We still talk about him winning, but Tucker's hitting 51s and 49s to win games and stuff like that.
Yeah, let's not gloss over that.
Well, yeah, and that's a good segue to our friends at Royal Farms. Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills. All of our Ravens coverage brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. The coffee is in my Cole Roofing mug here this morning. Billy Cole joined us in person. Like, I didn't realize, like, my wife had never really spent time with Bill Cole. So Cole Roofing, I mean, 2 years, my friends, I see them on Zoom and I feel like we get together all the time, but we don't. We were together at Conrad's. We'll be together again this week. Leonard Raskin from Raskin Global will be joining us. So we had a great conversation about renting and owning. And the Maryland Lottery presenting our Crab Cake Tour. And we'll be at Pappas on Friday from noon until 3. Come on out, say hello. Jim Reese from Offutt Kerman, as well as Mike Bordick, former Oriole. I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit of baseball as well as some football around here this week. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.